Good morning. I'd like to bring this meeting of House Education to order. It is 8:04 on Friday, March 13th. President or Representative Keller, Wilson, Munoz, Gardner, myself, Chair Seaton. At this time, I want to remind everybody on their cell phones. And today we will bring up House Bill 33, which is raising the compulsory school attendance age. And then we will also be holding a roundtable discussion on strengthening a needs-based and provision of merit-based scholarship for Alaska. And looking at if the committee wishes to craft certain elements into a bill. At this time, is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing nothing, Representative Munoz, would you like to? Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Seaton and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here today. I really appreciate your allowance of the time to discuss this important issue. And if you'll forgive me, my voice is failing with all the talking that we've been doing this last week. excuse me. I'm motivated to work on this issue by what I see happening in my own community, where in this community, in the general population, one in every four or five kids is not completing school. Those are kids that start in the ninth grade and for whatever reason are not able to finish. We find anecdotally that there are many reasons that may surprise us. These are kids that are not necessarily failing academically. There could be other reasons, such as bullying, problems, interpersonal problems. Even recently, I found that there could be a correlation with failure in freshman PE, which I found startling. I really believe that Alaska, by sending the message that kids can be done with school at the age of 16, is sending the wrong message. Across Alaska, 57,000 of our residents over the age of 18 do not have a high school diploma. Many of our kids, 4,000 children, or close to adults, are not finishing school every year, or dropping out of school every year, 4,000 kids a year. The proposed change to statute that we are proposing today keeps into place all the current exemptions in law, including those exemptions for homeschoolers, private schoolers, and kids, of course, that meet the requirements of the law before they turn 18. The exemption for homeschoolers includes the exemption for state homeschool programs.
I understand that your voice is having a problem. there's a box right by your knee. If you could move just a little towards Terry and get a little further away from it. We've got technical problems. Oops, now we have more things.
Oh, okay.
I'll scoot over.
Yeah.
Allow me.
Okay. I also believe that strengthening the law and extending the mandatory attendance age is a tool that will empower parents, because it will give parents the ability to say, no, you have to stay in school, and the law will be behind the parents in that important matter. The change is supported by school districts across the state, including the Anchorage School District, the Fairbanks School District, Juneau, and Cordova. We have letters of support from Superintendent Carol Como, and Superintendent Peggy Cowan of the Juneau School District is here to speak to you today. As I said earlier, 4,000 kids a year are dropping out. These are not bad kids. They're dropping out for many reasons. And I think we need to work hard to continue the successes that we're having in the areas of vocational education and other areas to find meaningful work and experiences for these kids to keep them engaged. Too many kids, though, are leaving early, and I feel this is a crisis situation, and I really believe that this is at the foundation of it. I would like to read into the record a letter from Jackie Martin, who is the Grand Camp, is on the Grand Camp of the Alaska Native Sisterhood. And I would like to read her letter because she is one of the individuals that has inspired me to pursue this legislation. If I may, can I read? It's
yes,
a short letter. Thank you. Honorable Paul Seaton, my name is Jacqueline Martin, executive committee member of the Alaska Native Sisterhood Grand Camp and council member of ANS Camp 70 Local Camp. All our members are strong advocates for all Alaskan Natives. We support HB 33 to encourage and give young people a chance to complete their education. We can read negative into House Bill 33 and say that 50% of our students are dropouts, but we can also say that 50% are graduates and the rest are pushed out. Please accept these comments as encouragement to pass HB 33. I offer these answers to the questions put forward by the Education Committee, and I believe these were the questions that we discussed at our Wednesday meeting. What are the basis of a high school diploma? Basis for high school diploma comes easily with a positive family and community. Even then, sometimes this isn't enough. They need a second chance once obstacles have been identified. The second chance is HB 33. A high school diploma is hard to come by. Rules and laws change not quickly, but fast enough to see a difference in graduates. No child left behind, qualifying exam, and other obstacles such as drugs and alcohol are made available to the children. There are many social issues in large and small communities. Please don't misinterpret me, but I believe in some of the new laws and changes. Two, is there an inherent problem with the design of graduation requirements that produces dropouts? The Tlingit tribe in this area can take up hours of your time telling you sorrowful stories in our own Juneau School District. Some inherent problems are discrimination, social issues, and poverty. Yes, it is an inherent problem, not only in Alaska, but it is a national problem. There are many beautiful teachers that give more of themselves. They also use their own funds, and I offer these teachers kudos. How does a community instill zero dropout tolerance of its community? Pass this bill and let's get our communities back on track. I believe in the old saying, it takes a community to raise a child. And three, is the high school qualifying exam a positive or a negative as relates to children's performance and graduation? I spoke about the percent success rate among Alaskan Natives, so now let's address the negative. According to newspapers, we have the highest rate of drunks, the most suicide, the most thieves, the most sex abusers, and we have the highest percentage of dropouts. I would like to see a solution to these statistics. It is tiresome to read statistics without solutions. I heard a speaker talk about herself as an Alaskan Native. She is a successful person today and was perhaps talking about the Natives as a whole, as being invisible in the school system. Time is changing relationships among the Natives and governments and local residents. I do see many good changes. I see Alaska Native gaining respect in our communities. And I'm 66 years old and have seen more Natives and non-Natives working together. There is hope for change among our students. I believe with the passage of this bill, change will begin and the dropout rate will lessen. Not immediately, but it will begin soon. Is the qualifying exam a good thing? Yes, it helps our successful Natives offer an equal chance in the national population. Then on the other hand, this is a difficult exam for many, and many oppose this exam. I believe also that this is one of many reasons why many drop out of school today. They can't pass the exam. Conclusion, thank you for your time. We realize that there is much opposition to this bill. We heard many statistics about the Native people's problems. Today, we, the Alaska Native Sisterhood Grand Camp and the Alaska Native Sisterhood Camp 70, stand in support of HB 33 as the beginning of many solutions to come for our students. Sincerely, Jacqueline Market Martin, ANS Grand Camp Executive Committee. Thank you. And now I'd like to introduce Terry Harvey to walk you through the materials, and then if we could go to public testimony.
And before we go further, I want to recognize that Representative Edgman is here, has been with us for some time.
Mr. Chairman, if you allow me just for a moment, and this is Terry Harvey, staff, Rep. Mignot, to continue to set the table just for a minute. On February of this year, President Obama, in his State of the Address to Congress, stated, "Dropping out of high school is no longer an option. It's not just quitting on yourself, it's quitting on your country, and this country needs and values the talents of every American." It's a pretty powerful statement. And dropping out of high school is no longer an option. The premise of HB 33 is to take that statement and bring it home to Alaska. We take that statement with this bill and we add, dropping out of high school is no longer an option for students in Alaska until they reach the age of 18. And the current age a person can exit from school is 16. There are exemptions in statute. Representative Mignot mentioned that. But otherwise, until 16, you must remain in school. Our bill proposes a change in our statute that says you no longer have our permission to leave school before you graduate. And that's a pretty strong statement as well, we believe. And it's really what it's meant to be. You can call it tough love if you want. Compulsory age laws in Alaska and across the country are a version of that concept. And it's a strong statement. Dropping out of high school is no longer an option. But if you recall on Wednesday, when we had some wonderful folks sitting right here, there were some pretty strong statements made as well. Now, Carl Rose was here from the Alaska Association of School Boards, and he may be here today. We have a letter of support for this bill from him. He stated, "Schools cannot do this alone." We agree. It takes a community to address a problem of this magnitude, and Carl has said in the past, this is an issue we all own. Now, the legislature, we believe, is a part of that community in Alaska, and we are part owner of this problem. HB 33 is how you, as legislators, can be a part of the solution. We believe it addresses one component, one piece of the puzzle here. And Eric McCormick was here from the Department of Education. He talked about a recent gathering in February. There were Department of Education, school boards, school districts. He said there was a new approach that was needed. It was the new three R's: rigor, relevance, relationships. Now, HB 33 requires the rigor of students and of educators to make it all the way to graduation. You know, no doubt this morning we're going to talk about the issue of competence versus endurance. And that's a valid debate, there's no doubt. We'll discuss competence, we'll discuss diversity, alternative programming. It's all designed to engage students on, excuse me, whatever level is necessary for success. And we welcome that discussion. It's a part of this bill and this idea. But because without the diversity in school programming that reaches out, you know, raising the age alone is not going to be effective. But getting back to competency versus endurance, we believe, make no mistake, getting the 21 credits to graduate does require endurance. And anyone who's graduated from high school can probably speak to that. Getting a diploma, I know I can. So we believe we need to do everything we can to encourage our students to make it all the way to the end, and HB 33 does that. It tells everyone there is an expectation until the age of 18 you will be in school. It's in our statutes. It's a minimum requirement. Now, I want to mention Walter Soboloff. He was a powerful speaker the other day, 39 years in the education business. He said, "Our responsibility is to look for every possible solution to seek success for our students." And I put the emphasis on every, but those were his words. We believe strongly that HB 33 is one of those possible solutions. There's no single solution. We'll say it again. But this is one component towards this goal. Karen Martinson, by the way, from Sitka, an alternative high school teacher, longtime educator, she said, we need an emergency response. And if you believe that, HB 33 is that type of response. The bottom line to where we're going with this is we're trying to address a commonly used excuse that early exit students declare over and over and over, because I can. You know, parents, teachers, school boards, administration, folks, citizens, the legislature, this is our response to a 16-year-old individual. Are they really ready to make that decision? It doesn't seem that it is so, based on the discussions we've been having. We have a lot of evidence. It's very compelling. You know, early exit kids will earn less. Staying in school even for an additional year will make a difference in their income potential. We know an early exit, they'll be more likely to be a part of our correction system, and I'm not talking about an employees. They're more likely to need more public assistance. And so we believe strongly that with HB 33, we can remove the one excuse that most early exit students declare, because I can. And I appreciate your indulgence with that opening. Quickly, would like to go through our appendix just to give you an idea of why this particular documents were presented. We've all been looking at stacks about this big, and there's certainly mountains more that we have. We tried to specifically use excerpts and go towards documents that support this particular concept of raising the compulsory age. Attachment A is a very strong case. It's called the case for reform. And on page 2, and there was questions on Wednesday, are there been any surveys? This is Appendix A, page 2. Are there been any much survey work done on reasons why kids leave school early? And one that really jumped out of us with this study is, had too much freedom and not enough rules in my life. That was number 4, 38%. That was a response. We believe that this bill speaks to that. Another important aspect of this particular report states that overall enrollment rates among 16-year-olds are lower in states that allow them to drop out at 16. They go to a quarterly journal of economics report that came out in the 90s, and we have that here, an Angrist-Kruger study. And they have a complex equation and have gone on to conclude through their studies that raising the compulsory age has been effective in raising the percentile rates. They go on to say that it, in some cases, up to 20%, but we have other studies that they go back and forth on the kind of percentages that they raise. That's attachment B, Mr. Professor Oriopoulos in Toronto, and he took an academic approach with a complex formula and predicted that compulsory ages raised to 17 and 18 had a positive percentage increase. We include an ICER study, just a brief excerpt from an ICER study, that's attachment C, that addresses the overall issue of early exits in Alaska. And it is more general information and tied into the discussion we had on Wednesday. But it's a very good snapshot, if you will, of the current situation in Alaska. And a lot of the statistics and the studies and reports are nationwide and come from a lot of places. This particular study is specific to Alaska, and we think it's important to include it. We've included from the NEA their 12-point action plan, and number one is to mandate high school graduation and to review compulsory ages and to raise those ages. We also will have the NEA from Alaska that will speak to this bill in support. And attachment E was an important, very short excerpt from a Learning Point Associates report about compulsory ages. What was important about this study is they went to the Pasadena County in Texas. In Texas, they're allowing school districts to raise compulsory age laws on a county-by-county situation, which is a little bit progressive and unusual. But this particular school district has done an excellent job of tracking and has shown positive results from raising their age from 16 to 17. Thought it would be important to try to have something in here that really showed some results. We included a few media articles just for reference. Most folks saw last fall there was a meeting that Senator Murkowski brought a group of educators in Anchorage together. Some really good group of folks got together and had a big discussion. And it just points out the awareness of the issue in Alaska. And we wanted to include include just a recent story about Chugach School District and an alternative program they have there that for us points to the validity of raising compulsory ages. Without programs like the Voyage to Excellence program in Chugach, and there are alternative programming all over the state in place now that's doing great things, but this one is in particular really jumped out at us, and this is very recent. And they're getting their students into a program, a specialized program that engages them and takes them out of their own home and goes to the Anchorage, and they spend time there, and it's trait-based studies, and they're doing important alternative programming with this that's really having an effect. But the bottom line, they are having a 98% graduation rate with this kind of a program.
Well, Mr. Harvey, I just
and that's it.
Have to interrupt for just a moment.
Yes, sir.
I mean, I totally agree. Are you saying that the Chugach system has been able to implement a mandatory 18-year-old graduation have been able to mandate this within the state and have been having compulsory age to 18 instead of 16?
No, sir. Mr. Chairman, bringing this forward, this program, was to give a good, strong example of alternative programming that is being successful. But compulsory age law is the same there as it is anywhere else around the state. 16 would be the level that a student could drop out of school there.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify whether we were relating that to compulsory age. That's fine. I think that we all have this material.
Yep.
Before we get too much into the weeds on these studies and what they mean, and what they indicate, I think what we'll do is have the committee ask questions on the bill itself, and then we'll go to public testimony, and then we'll come back to committee discussion. So, Representative Edge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry for being a few minutes late to the bill sponsor and to Mr. Harvey. The bill says shall maintain the child in attendance, and this is on line 7. And perhaps this is a question that is better suited for the department, but what does the word shall imply in terms of, if I look at the NEA Alaska letter of recommendation, it also says NEA Alaska believes the legislature should establish penalties for noncompliance with Alaska compulsory attendance laws, but what's sort of encapsulated in that term shall? Is there going to be regulations? Is there going to be any sort of enforcement mechanism?
Shall is the current language in state law, and the change of this bill is to change 16 to 18. It's not to change the language in the statute.
Okay. I'll follow up with questions later.
Are there further questions? The bill itself is fairly simple. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually a new day. It's kind of exciting to me because, and you probably remember this, but because I think you were in too, but it hasn't been too many years ago that this, an identical bill to this, well, I'm not sure if it's identical or not, but many of the school systems were against it at that time.
That's true.
And so we are seeing a shift in the ideas and the philosophy of schools because since I've been in the legislature, this has come up. And there wasn't very much support for it, but I think we have a lot more support for it now than we did at that time. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually glad to hear that it's a start, but it's not definitely the answer, because it's the relationships that take part, I think, with these children that will make a difference. Mm-hmm. But we have to kind of have an anchor, something to hold them there so that we can go on with it. But the latest research on brain development shows that at 16 they aren't capable of making the right decisions, because those decisions with consequences really don't take place until about age 24. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I think I've changed my mind on this a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the bill, and I look forward to seeing it moving through the the system.
Reverend Gardner.
Thank you very much. In our packets, there's an email from Kelly Foreman to Representative Seaton, and included in that is a comparison of compulsory school age and dropout rates on a state-by-state basis, and the states are grouped, those with age 16 mandatory attendance, and their average dropout rate for those states is 23.4. For states with a 17-year compulsory limitation, the dropout rate is 26.9, slightly higher. And for those with an 18, it's 23.9, which is, again, just very slightly higher than the 16. So looking at these without drilling down into more of the data, it would seem that states with 17 or 18-year-old mandatory attendance don't have any better dropout rates than those with 16.
Mm-hmm. And thank you. And just for the members' information, that came in late, and it's in the back of your packet, slipped into the the back fold.
In that same section, there's an email from Todd Brocious to Terry Harvey, and talks about truancy figures that are reported federally on a regular basis. And I'd be very interested in seeing a synopsis of those truancy figures, if we could. They're not the same as dropout rates, but at the same time, I'm sort of curious about how effective we are and what's done in other places to address 15-year-olds who just don't go to school. And in some of the work I used to do as a GAL, you know, I had cases with 15-year-olds who just refused to go to school. Sometimes their parents didn't care. Sometimes their parents didn't have the tools to make them go. Mm-hmm. And didn't know how to do it. Wouldn't happen in my house, I can assure you. Mm-hmm. But it happens in some houses. So it seems to me if we have situations where people either can't or won't make their 15-year-olds attend, why would we think we could make them do it with their 18-year-olds mm-hmm. or their 17-year-olds?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we will definitely track down the truancy information for you. Also, I want to comment that on Wednesday, one of the tables that we had outlined the numbers of dropouts at certain kids that were not finishing at certain years of age in Alaska. And if it's in our materials, and I don't have it right at hand right here, but I remember that there definitely was a spike at 16. Because, you know, the number was higher at 16, and then it was less at 17 and 18. But it was curious to me. You might take a look at that.
Okay, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. My kids, when they were in high school, used to tell me that there was a lot of kids cutting school, misbehaving, using drugs and stuff when they were in 9th and 10th grade. They didn't see it in 11th and 12th. And what my kids told me is because the kids who were the biggest problems in 9th and 10th grade weren't in school by 11th and 12th. They just were gone. It wasn't that they kind of quit doing that stuff. They just weren't on campus anymore. So I suppose those are the kids that we're kind of trying to target, but it isn't without its risks to the rest of the population.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the teacher or the former principal of the alternative high school here in Juneau told me that anecdotally that she'll see students doing very well, and then they get to not in every situation, of course, but often that kids, there could be a situation that happens, you know, a fight with a boyfriend or a bad day, and sometimes something very simple can lead to frustration and wanting to give up. And it, you know, I really believe that if the law were in place that said, you know, you really must be in school until you're 18 or until you finish the requirements of your education, then those sorts of easy exits wouldn't happen as often.
Representative Gardner.
It sounds reasonable, but the little chart that shows what's happened in other states doesn't seem to bear that out.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I may,
Mr.
Representative Gardner, that chart that you speak of in the email that came points out probably one of the biggest frustrations that we have in looking at this issue in general, and that's the issue of accurately tracking mm-hmm. percentage rates, graduation rates, how they correlate to compulsory age rates. They're done differently state by state. There's not a nationwide national system in place, and I think there's a movement to do that, and it makes a lot of sense because there are statistics available, pretty easy statistics to come by that would show that in one state where 16 is the age that they have a better percentage of graduation rates than a state with, say, 18. But it's very possible in our mind that the results are not always as accurate as they could or should be based on the fact that one state is compiling their statistics and reporting their percentages in a different way than another. And it really points out to that situation as much as it does prove, if you will, that compulsory age rates don't really make a difference.
Yeah.
Yes, Representative Gardner.
So maybe one way to look at it would be to compare a state that had a 16-year cutoff and then went to 18, and what do they see over time? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that information if is available anywhere.
We'll certainly try to track that down for you.
Okay. Thank you. Are there further questions about the bill? Okay, let's go to public testimony. I'll open public testimony, and we have with us Becca Lee, I believe it is. Becca Lee, are you here? Would you come forward? Did you want to testify? Okay. How about Eli Rolfe? Does Eli wish to testify? Sure, come on forward, Eli.
Not true, is he? It's in section J.
And the next person will be Patricia George. Welcome to the committee, and you got to stay away from this side of it. There you are. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Would you identify yourself and who you're representing for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony?
My name is Eli Rolfe, and I am here on behalf of Yaku Stakahiti, the alternative school. And I heard in the opening statement that it was said that 34% of the reason that people were not coming to school, high school, that is, was that there was too much freedom and all that. That's how they were not going to school, is what it seems like to me. The reasons are various. I mean, it seems that people that decide not to go to school there's a whole bunch of different reasons why they're not doing it. I guess what I'm trying to say here is that people that aren't going to school have all these reasons to not go to school, but they have these reasons that I guess kind of clattered here.
That's okay. Take your time.
Yeah. Give me a minute to claim myself. Thank you.
Give him a compliment.
Yeah, it's always hard when first time when you're testifying before a committee. It looks like, but
yeah, had it all planned out back there.
That's what we do. We often make notes to ourselves, so when we forget, we can go back. If you want, Eli, we can put you down further on the list, and you can come back up, or you can go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Gardner?
I wonder if it would be helpful for Eli if you started by telling us what you think about the proposal.
Right.
And then back into why.
Well, I think the proposal is a good idea for the most part. I mean, I guess I'm kind of cloudy on what they're going to do if the kids proceed on not going to school. I mean, the reasons might be because their parents need them to work to bring money up, and I was told that if they aren't going to school, then a truancy officer was going to find out the reason, and if they proceeded to not go to school again, then they would be fined. And I definitely know kids that don't go to school because they need to raise money for their family. And if you're fining them for not going to school, then you're also taking money, and they're trying to raise money, and it's just one vicious cycle that just brings them down. I mean, it just seems like there's numerous reasons why people have to not go to school.
Thank you, Eli. Representative Munoz.
And I believe the law, the exemptions in the law allow for emancipated students, people that are living independently of their parents or having to, you know, earn a living, so to speak. And there are definitely exemptions in the current law, and this law would not change those exemptions.
Okay, that's what I was kind of cloudy on.
Can I say something?
Go ahead and identify yourself.
I'm Rebecca Lee.
Rebecca Lee, okay. Would you, are you a student or?
I'm a student at Yakus too.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Rebecca.
My biggest concerns are what Eli is talking about. There are certain kids, especially at Yakus, who face things that most kids don't have to. They have to grow up faster than they're used to. They have kids. They don't live with their parents. I mean, for me, I didn't go to school for a year and a half, and I didn't ever see a truancy officer, and I was under 16. So I don't understand what's going to stop kids from not going to school in the future. It was easy for me to skip school. And kids are certainly too young to realize that school is important, and I think that in the middle of my junior year is when I first started figuring out that this is really important for me, and I really want to graduate. So raising it is probably what's best for the kids.
Something I'd like to add on that. I think the biggest thing that you guys could do to bring it to the students' attentions is really sit them down on a real level, and instead of speaking down at them, speaking at them as equals and showing them that we're not trying to force you into doing this. We're trying to make you realize that it's a big part of your life, and that you literally cannot survive if you do not, like, or as well as you would like to.
And I think that kids have more influence on other kids than teachers do, because with teenagers, being as ignorant as we are, don't see teachers, we see authority figures who are trying to put us down in most cases. So if we got another student teaching about why school is so important.
Sure. Thank you. And we have a couple of questions. Representative Wilson and then Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know it takes a lot of courage to come up here and speak, but I just wanted to share with you that I was one of the students that dropped out for a year and went back. So I kind of know where you're at a little bit. Your reasons probably aren't the same as my reasons. But just because you drop out doesn't mean you can't go back and change your life a little bit. So I really am proud of you that you're coming up here and testifying. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Keller?
Yeah, this question is for either one of you. But the alternative school you're part of now, do you have a real, they clarified your goal, like what do you have yet to do before you get across the hurdle? And you could describe that if we were in a conversation?
Well, I think what I wanted to say before was mostly what I think of when the reason the kids are dropping out is that they have confrontation with other students or their teachers, but with confrontation with other students, they can choose to ignore it because it's a big enough school, but with teachers, you're with them practically the same amount as you're with your parents, so it has to have a good relationship, and if you don't have a good relationship with your teachers, you're not going to want to go to school. But at Yakus, we're all like a big family. We all know each other by the first name. We all know each other's last name, what you like to do for fun. What we do on Fridays, we have advisory days, and we work on going to college, how we're going to graduate, when we're going to graduate, what classes we're going to take, and even checking in and see how other people are doing, get to know them, get to know their lives. And it's really important. It does make a big difference.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony, Ruth. Appreciate it. Patricia George, are you?
Further down your list is Brett Dillingham, and he's joining me. Oh, I thought you'd sit down over there. I didn't want to be next to the thing.
I don't blame you.
Do you want to go first?
Sure.
And would you identify yourself and who you represent for the record?
You bet. I'm Brett Dillingham, and I'm co-chair of the advocacy committee with Patty George here, the Alaska State Literacy Association. And that's over 500 members. It's the largest educational organization in the state. We're both past presidents of the organization. We are here to speak. ASLA, or Alaska State Literacy Association, our members would like to see this bill modified. We're very interested in seeing compulsory education start at age 6. It's currently at age 7. The reasons, except for the exceptions which have been talked about here before, and not all of them have, but there's children that are homeschooled, children have certain disabilities, and we're very comfortable with those exemptions. But if a child doesn't have to start school until age 7, and they start at 7, almost all those children are way behind in reading because they're coming from families that have kept them home, not doing homeschooling and not doing lots of education with them, although there are exceptions to that. But a lot of the children that are starting at age 7 have been at home watching television or just not being monitored well by their parents and certainly not engaging in the sorts of educational activities that prepare a child for school. And so these kids who start at 7 are woefully unprepared for the testing that begins at age 8. And they're not reading, and they're not writing, and they're failures starting right off the bat. A very, very high percentage of these children are your dropouts. A very high percentage of these children are the students who are behavior problems throughout school. So what we would like to see is to have this changed. We believe that having compulsory education in the state of Alaska begin at age 6 will take care of a lot of the problems that we see down the road. And Ms. George would like to add some things to that, in addition her personal experience as a first grade teacher.
You each have a packet that I prepared for you. And in that packet.
And Ms. George, would you go ahead and just say your name?
Oh, I'm sorry, Patricia George, co-chair of the Advocacy Committee for Alaska State Literacy Association. Okay, I'm reading mine. The Alaska State Literacy Association strongly believes that mandatory school age attendance age should be lowered from age 7 to 6. There are several House and Senate bills currently under consideration that would provide quality preschool and kindergarten programs. And in your packet, you'll see the Alaska State Literacy Association's position paper on literacy development in the Alaska children ages 3 to 5. However, we believe that our children need to be required to attend school by age 6. We have provided the committee with a chart and summary showing that of 32 states, that there are 32 states that require students attend school by age 6. From my personal experience as a first grade teacher, there is no way to compel parents to have their children, I will not touch it, to compel students to attend school. And they miss, if they're not there regularly and on time, they miss critical learning steps. I know that there are parents who feel that changing the statute will infringe on their rights as parents, but it is my understanding that the change in mandatory school attendance age does not change any of the waivers that are already built into the law. It is important to have children who attend public school come to school regularly so that they don't miss the critical steps in the learning process. House Bill 33 is an appropriate vehicle to make the change in state statute. We urge you to amend House Bill 33 to lower the mandatory school age from 7 to 6. We provided the staff, and you should have in your packet, a proposed amendment. Thank you, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Leaving aside children who are homeschooled, at least for the first few years, I know many homeschoolers will do it for younger children and send them to public schools later, and leaving aside those parents who simply ignore or neglect their kids and don't bother sending them to school for whatever reason, can you think of any reasons that competent, involved parents might not want their 5-year-olds to go to a full-day school or even their 6-year-olds to go to full-day school? I mean, in other words, is full-day school really right for all 5- and 6-year-olds?
Through the chair, we're asking for age 6, which is normally first grade. And as a first grade teacher, I can tell you that what you think of as very competent parents often feel that they don't have to have their children at school on time, or they don't have to go to school, say, on Monday, because they're not mandated to have them there. As a first grade teacher, I'd go to the attendance clerk and say, what can we do? This child is missing a 20th of their school. And 20% of their
school. Representative Gardner.
I'm not talking about those parents. I mean, I'm talking about parents who are very engaged with their children, and what I'm getting at, I think, is that there are some children who are not necessarily developmentally ready, or their families are doing other things with them, not formally homeschooling, but I believe that there are some 5-year-olds now, and I know you're talking about 6, not 5, but many school districts, including my own, have full-day kindergarten, and that may not be right for all kids who have competent, involved parents who are doing all the right things, but full-day kindergarten is not necessarily in the best interest of a particular 5-year-old or even a 6-year-old. I mean, there are some kids who are just not mature enough, and maybe I'm asking you if you could see good reasons that some people might say, my 6-year-old is not ready for all-day school.
Okay. Again, and we're talking 6-year-olds. That's all we're interested in is representatives of the State Literacy Association. And you're right. There are some kids like that. And maybe there's a way to determine who those children are and that they would not have to be compulsorily attending, just like kids who are homeschooled or go to certain private schools, et cetera, would not have to have compulsory attendance too. I don't know how to do that right now. I don't know how to make that determination. But you're right, there probably are. I know there are parents like that. I know there are kids like that. And for those kids, I think there should be a waiver or an exemption. And it's not in the statute that I'm aware of right now. Uh-huh. So maybe there is a way to make sure that those kids don't have to. I don't know what that is right now. I've not looked at it from that perspective. It's a good question.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Oops. Can I, through the chair, can I add a little bit more? In your packet, there's a chart that shows school mandatory attendance age from all the states, and it's the last, 2006 was the last year that they, federal government has that. And you'll see that on age 5 especially, most of the states have a waiver, and the parents don't have to do it. As a first-grade teacher, I felt it was my responsibility to meet the needs of all the children that came to my classroom, even those who were not as developmentally ready as the rest of the class. So most teachers understand that the children come at a broad range of abilities, but I also recognize the fact that as they get older, the gap between the cans and cannots gets wider. And so it's important to have children there on a regular basis so that they can get the building blocks. And they may have to cycle through it more than once or twice. You know, special ed, what I remember learning when I got my master's in special ed was that if a normal child takes 200 repetitions to learn a certain thing, it takes 2,000 repetitions for a learning disabled child to learn it. So teachers are supposed to be equipped to meet the needs of most of the children that come, or you know, not all, you can't get everybody's, but you're supposed to be able to handle most of the children that come to your classroom. Mm-hmm. And then you have other people in the building that help you with those that are more demanding.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
See, we have Lydia Garcia. Welcome, and you might want to sit in
over here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Seaton, members of House Education Committee. For the record, my name is Lydia Garcia, and I serve as the Executive Director for NEA Alaska. We represent almost 13,000 public school employee members throughout the state. That's educators and school employees that work in the schools. I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 33. This bipartisan legislation is an attempt to address the problem of, quite frankly, our children not remaining in school. I will repeat a lot of what you've heard. I can't emphasize the importance of this bill enough. The reasons teenagers decide to drop out, as we heard from the young lady and the young man, are numerous. They're many and they're varied, but certainly there are times when it's just a fact that legally they do not have to attend school, which helps them out the door. House Bill 33 will raise the upper end of mandatory attendance in Alaska school to the age of 18. While this certainly isn't a silver bullet, it is a good ingredient in any recipe for success in life. As the sponsor has stated, the more education one receives, the better earning potential one acquires, and a better chance of personal success ensues. About 6 weeks ago, 450 public school employee delegates elected by their peers met in Anchorage Hilton and set the policy for the coming year for NEA Alaska. And one of their resolutions passed by this 2009 Delegate Assembly stated, NEA Alaska believes the legislature should establish policies for noncompliance with Alaska's compulsory attendance laws. This legislation takes those laws a step further. It is the belief, however, of NEA Alaska that a law with no teeth would serve no purpose. So Alaska school employees work hard to offer our children opportunities that prepare them for life. We cannot fulfill the promise of a high quality education for Alaska's children if they're not in our classrooms. So we applaud the efforts and the direction of House Bill 33 and ask that you move this legislation from this committee. And I want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks. And Lydia, we have a one of our tabs, I guess, tab D, that has the NEA 12-point action plan, and that's calling for a compulsory age for everyone below the age of 21 until they get a diploma. Is that the NEA's position in NEA Alaska as well?
Yes, the intent here, Seaton, is there's no intent on, through the chair, appreciated the question earlier asked by Representative Edgman. The intent is not to be punitive. The intent is what can we do to build in systems to help our young people succeed through their educational experience. And at times that may have a different, I mean, look differently, because there may be other alternative methods, other options for providing that education. And it may, because of special needs, you know, the circumstances could vary also as far as an individual requiring additional time to complete that. And so perhaps those are programs and other resources that are available for that education to occur.
But I guess the subject of this bill is raising to 18, and your number one point is that it should be, as I see it here on number one, is mandate high school graduation or equivalent as compulsory for everyone below the age of 21.
For us, it's 18. That is the ideal situation. And I think when you read the 19 to 21, that is, again, yet another it's stretching the thought of how can we continue to provide education to people who actually want the education but cannot accomplish it by 18 for whatever purposes. So it's an added layer, it's an added incentive, but it isn't intended to be the position that we absolutely believe they need to stay in school until 21. We want them to stay in school until 18, and we still want to be a resource for that education in the event that they're wanting that education.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are there further questions? Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly support the bill and I support the concept, but I'm, as I read more of the material, and I didn't get a chance to read my packet beforehand, I'll openly admit, but I've read enough now to understand that we can raise the bar, if you will, from age 16 to age 18. But as I look at Appendix J from Todd Brocious, it says that I can confirm that there is no uniform or standard response to truancy in Alaska's public schools. Alaska's truancy laws explicitly give districts local authority to establish their procedures. Then there's the second paragraph talks about the tie-in to withholding No Child Left Behind reimbursements for school districts and so forth. But we heard some compelling testimony from a couple of very brave young students who came forward and shared their own personal experiences. And looking at the statistics provided by Kelly Foreman, breaking down the age group six, the compulsory requirements at 16, 17, and 18, I guess I'm just wondering if we raise the age from 16 to 18, it looks good on paper, but in effect, it doesn't really get us completely to where we want to go. And my question, maybe to the bill sponsor as well at some point in this discussion, is whether we need to do more than just simply raise the bar from 16 to 18.
Through the chair, I can give a perspective. I believe that raising the age is not the limit of what we should and could do as a state and really as a federal government to provide additional financial resources to infuse more additional dollars into our schools to enhance the programs, enhance professional development for educators, also to enhance opportunities for family schools and community partnerships to work together on what sort of programs might be helpful.
And I just want to point out that as I've read this material, every single study says, the Gates study, everything else, raise it, but it's always in conjunction with changing the way we're delivering education. There's all the statistics that we've been given, as I read each one of these, it doesn't matter whether it's Gates or the others, they're always talking about multiple changes, and so, you know, I don't think we can, I mean, we can clarify, but I don't want to get too far in the weeds on individual other changes, because what we have before us right now is this single bill. So thank you very much. And
can I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up, and then we have four more people to testify.
But throughout the course of discussing the merits of this bill, I mean, we for comparative purposes, we have other states.
Sure.
And so for lack of maybe better benchmarks, that's what we have in front of us. And so that's what I was referring to. But I still don't have a solid understanding of, and I want to go back to this, maybe I'll just narrow it down to the truancy laws in Alaska, and I'll just ask you specifically, is there some merit to maybe at some point examining the truancy laws in Alaska, for example, to sort of support this bill going forward?
Through the chair, I always encourage a review of any current laws that we have and do an evaluation of where are we. Are they working? And if not, what do we need to do in order to have them become more effective?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lydia, I think you said, and I was writing as fast as I could, the legislature should establish policies for noncompliance with Alaska school attendance laws. That was a resolution. Mm-hmm. But it's not part of the action plan.
And you're through the chair. And you're referring to the NEA.
Yes.
12-point. The NEA 12-point is the national action plan. So there is a difference. That's the national, and we're NEA Alaska, which they did not create this.
Thank you. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lydia. Appreciate your testimony. Nosh?
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Nosh? Naupolos?
Noah. Looks like Noah.
Is it Noah? Sorry. Does he wish to testify? How about Seth? Seth? Okay, and Julie? No. I'll ask for additional.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't initially intend to speak coming to this, but I just was taking notes on what I was hearing, and I'm sorry?
Would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent for the record?
I'm sorry. I'm representing no one. My name is Julie Machakos.
Move just a little further away from the mic.
Sure.
Mic. There you go. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
My name is Julie Machakos, and I'm not representing anyone. We just came as my sons and I homeschool, and we just came as an opportunity to be part of a neat experience here. So, and I guess I have just a few thoughts. They aren't really meant to persuade anyone or not, but one of my questions was something that I heard Representative Mignot's state from Mrs. Martin, who had written a letter. And one of the things I heard in there was she had said she was looking for the kids to have a chance to complete their education. I thought that was an interesting statement because kids have a chance to complete their education, whether it's compulsory or not. And the two young students that testified, Mr. Rolfe and Ms. Lee, I thought they brought up a very interesting point that for them, they have a reason to stay in school. Maybe coming to the alternative school, some of the kids might have come through some hard knocks to get there, but they have a reason to be there. They have relationships with the teacher. They're taking part in their own education. They're mapping out their own education. They are being responsible. Excuse me, I'm a little nervous. I'm shaking. They are taking responsibility for their own education. And what I heard from Mr. Rolfe and Ms. Lee is that they have a reason to be there. And I don't know that making things compulsory would give an 18-year-old student more of a reason to be there than a 16-year-old student. In other words, someone who is going to drop out at age 15 and not go on, do they have a reason to be in school? I don't know that making things compulsory would create a want to learn in the kids, I guess is what I'm saying. I think it does look, as Representative Edgman said, it does look good on paper to change it from 16 to 18 because in theory there's a safety net for the kids. But are those same kids, would they drop out anyways? So I guess maybe it's not so much compulsory that I think would make a difference as changing the way things are done in the school. I like the idea of the alternative school that the kids are very involved in their own education.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony, and I would welcome your response to my comment. It isn't really a question, but my comment is that the best thing we can do for kids is to give them caring parents. And in that context, I thank you for what you're doing for your boys. And I think we get into really dangerous ground, if you don't mind me giving an opinion that I would like her to respond to. If the state becomes the parent, if we get in a situation where the state prefers itself, you know, is the one that picks up the responsibility that parents ought to have, it's kind of a cultural situation we're in. And I was wondering if you'd like to respond to that as a homeschooling mom. So.
I guess anything that I would have to say would come from being a homeschooling mom who's very involved. But I also understand that there are parents who are not involved with their children. And that's where I think the difference is made when the kids are in school. If the ones who are in the school, if they can somehow be motivated to learn through, it sounds like the teachers at the alternative school have a good thing going with their kids there, that they're very actively involved one-on-one with the kids. So I think it's great if parents can be involved, but I also know that that's the ideal and not the real.
Fantastic. Thank you. Good response.
Thank you very much, Julie. Peggy Cowan.
Good
And I do want to remind the committee, I don't want to cut off discussion, but we are going to have a roundtable on student loan programs today. If we can get, we can ignore roundtable.
No, you can ignore my request that I wrote you. Representative Seaton, members of the committee, I'm Peggy Cowan, Superintendent of Schools for the Juneau School District, and thanking you for giving your attention to this important bill and for hearing my testimony. And my thanks to Representative Munoz for bringing this important issue to you. One of the Juneau School District Board of Education's priorities for this legislative session is increasing the compulsory attendance age. The board's priority statement on this issue reads in part, "The current law requires attendance until age 17. So far in the Juneau School District this year, 46% of dropouts were under age 18. Increasing the mandatory age to 18 helps prevent students who are not mature enough from making decisions to forego basic education and provides a chance for them to meet performance standards and pass the high school graduation qualifying exam. We own the dropout problem as a district. We are addressing the problem in our district. Since I became superintendent, the graduation rate has increased by 22%. We've worked with our borough and established local truancy penalties, and we'll continue to work on the penalty and the enforcement side. But as Representative Seaton, you said, that's another issue at this point. We still have a ways to go. We still have a large room for improvement, and we will continue to do what we need to do and can do. But this is a big enough problem in the state that we need to team with the state. We need a local address it when we have at for the school district and the local borough government, but we need the state to partner as well. At the policy level, the legislature can assist the districts by raising the compulsory age and clearly communicating that the state of Alaska believes that education is important for all students, and this bill does that. Representative Wilson stated that brain research clearly shows that the judgment portion of the brain in a 15 and 16-year-old is not well developed in order to make these significant decisions. We view this really as a parent empowerment bill. The legislature will empower parents to keep students in school when they're 16 and 17 years old. Right now, there are many parents who cannot stop their children from dropping out on their 16th birthday. The correlations, as you've heard, and I'll be brief, with dropping out are all negative. A greater chance of poverty, ill health, incarceration, domestic violence, underemployment, need for costly services. This is not the future we want for Juneau students, and certainly not one that we want for students across Alaska. There are many misconceptions about dropouts. The dropouts in Juneau, and many of them have been successful. Over half have passed the high school qualifying exam. These are not students that are incapable of success. And this is an opportunity for the legislature to make a statement and to take a stand against the state's high dropout rate, and I encourage you to move this bill out and support it. Thank you.
Thanks, Peggy. And I just wanted to address one thing, and that was brought up by testimony from one of the other students that said that was no problem at all in Juneau to be out of school for a year and a half below the age of 16. So how does...
We've addressed the, it's still a problem, and we need more people, and we can expand our truancy efforts. We have a truancy tracker, basically an officer within the schools, and we've worked with it. We've switched because right now it's an offense at the state level, but we've had a hard time getting the state because their dockets are so full to work on it. So what we did was we switched it to be a local ticket, basically, like getting a smoking ticket or other ticket. And so we've now switched, we've changed it. Kenai does the same. Our laws, local borough is very similar, and so now we can give tickets. We don't have to depend on the state to prosecute it, and we do it as a borough.
And Peggy,
our employees, because we also the borough is also busy, and we're the ones that own the problem, and our employees can ticket it. So I don't know if this instance was before or after we put that in, but that's one of the things that we are addressing and trying to reach out and make sure that we are in touch and touch all those students.
And Peggy, can you write an email up to us or a paper explaining what that is and how, what the effectiveness of that change has been. We don't have time today. We have another issues, but that's a corollary to this, but we'd sure appreciate finding out how effective that has been. Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I'll make this quick. Peggy, what is the teacher-student ratio in the alternative school?
It's the same as it is in all our high schools. It's 26.25 to 1, which really, once you add, you know, prep periods and whatever, turns out to be around 30 to 1. But they have a variety of ways that they team and try to reduce class size. But in terms of our funding, it's the same. Also, you know, I think I was the last name on that sheet. I think there, unfortunately, for your timing here, there are other people. I know Mark Choate, chairman of the Board of Education for the Juneau School District, is behind me and had wanted to sign up. I think he might have signed up on the wrong sheet.
We have a couple of other people.
Okay, you do. Okay, great.
Cody Baldwin?
Yes.
Hi, did you want to testify, Cody? Please come forward.
I'm Cody Baldwin. I'm just representing myself, I guess.
Thank you, Cody. Would you go ahead and with your testimony?
Well, I think that, first of all, I mean, from personal experience, I'm actually having an issue, but this is kind of off topic, but I grew up in a house where we didn't allow gaming, like video games, and then all of a sudden I buy a PlayStation 3. Well, I don't know how to handle this freedom, because all of a sudden I have this new thing. And I think that the point that we have too much freedom, well, raising the age won't stop that freedom from happening, because they'll all of a sudden have this freedom. We got to find a way to make it so that they know how to use the freedom that they now have. I mean, going from 16 to 18, you're just putting off the freedom for 2 years, and then all of a sudden they have the freedom that, oh boy, I'm graduated. I have all this freedom now. And they will have no clue what to do with it. And so then they'll make wrong choices and all that. And then I also saw that your statistics say that 47% say that the classes weren't interesting. Well, the first 3 years at JDHS is mostly like health and PE and all this mandatory stuff. And so it's kind of like there's no way to really fix this problem. And I applaud what you guys are trying to do here, but I don't think that it's going to help, because then it's just kind of like taking away their freedom, and they're like, okay, well, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Do you mind if I add something?
Would you identify yourself on the record?
I'm Jordan Kerbo. I'm a student at Yarkoos. I've also noticed at JDHS, the way everything is put together, this kind of structure, do this, like he said, for the first 3 years, you're just doing just specific certain things. Instead, I think they should look at other schools, like Yarkoos, for instance, and how we run things at Yarkoos. We have smaller class sizes, so there's more one-on-one, which is great for all the students, because there's a lot of students that have multiple issues with their personal lives, as well as trying to make the challenges going through school. And with a little bit of effort that the teacher puts out, just saying, easy things, really, just like hi or something, getting more involved, because not all parents are involved with their kids going through school, so it's kind of nice.
Great, it sounds like a good school.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's meeting the needs of a lot of students, so thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Reverend Gardner?
Thank you. I have a question. When kids drop out of school, say at 15, below the current compulsory attendance, what kinds of things would be effective in compelling them to return to school if we were to try to do that?
Well, I did see that people were or we're thinking about making a bill where you have to be in school to have your driver's license and all that. And I think that would help because everyone wants to have their driver's license because then they can go hang out with their friends. And I mean, because Juneau's kind of spread out, and
yeah,
so it's kind of like I have friends out in the valley and I live downtown. Well, it's kind of like an hour on the bus to get all the way to my friend's house, and then kind of cutting into my fun time. And then maybe I don't know. There's
if you think of further things that you think would be an incentive or a different way to handle, you can write those up for us, and we'd appreciate getting them. And those ideas, I know, you know, when you're asked a question here, all the ideas that you have don't spring into your mind all at once, but we would really appreciate them. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a feeling that what you were saying, both of you, is that you really appreciated a teacher kind of paying a little more attention to you. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is a difference as far as, now I know the classroom might be smaller, or that so that teacher can have more time to do that. But is there truly a difference to the with the teachers in the regular high school versus this one?
There's a big difference. At the regular high school, if a teacher doesn't like you specifically, they'll be biased against you. I picked that up right offhand, just from personal experience.
I also see that if I'm having an issue and I'm like, well, I was working moving you guys in, and I was like, well, can I get a couple days off to do this job really quick? And they're like, okay, well, we can do that. But if I was in like JDHS, they'd be like, I couldn't be like, well, can I get a couple days off? And they'd be like, whatever, you're just one of how many students I have, and do whatever you want, I don't really care. But it's like, well, I get understanding for my personal issues, and if I'm having a bad day, they're gonna understand that, and they're not gonna be like, what's this, and keep bugging me, and then I'm gonna end up getting pissed off and then just leaving school because I'm so angry that I can't think straight and all that. But I have a connection with all my teachers in Yakutsk, and I mean, I say hi to them pretty much every day, and we talk, and we know how things are going with each other, and it's like a big family, as Becca said.
It also helps for students.
Thank you very much. And that was Cody and Jordan.
Yeah.
Can I add one thing, and then we have to move along. And how do you spell your last name?
Curbow.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, well, it helps a lot to the students when the teachers reach out more. Because when you go into a really rough time in your life, it's really nice to have somebody else there that can that you can talk to and relate to. There's something more, but I kind of forgot.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. We have someone from school board that's calling in. We have a president of the school board here. I know we can go on with this topic forever or for a long time, and I think that what we're going to have to do, unfortunately, is leave this topic and have them call back. Have them come back in on the next time. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to get to our roundtable, which we have scheduled today. How many people are here in the audience? Who's in the audience? Mark.
Yes.
Can you make it quick?
I can.
Okay, Mark, come on up. Oh, we have other people that haven't signed in.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I'll make it fast.
Did you sign in?
I'm Mark Choate, and I'm president of the Juneau School Board. Superintendent Cowan said all the reasons why the board supports this bill. I would like to have change the framing just slightly, the way you're looking at this, because I think that one of the things that happens, especially in education, is you always look at things from the student viewpoint or from the family viewpoint. I want to take the bigger picture and look at it from a societal and cultural perspective. Last year, despite everything we've been doing, 57% of our Native students didn't graduate. Call that push out. 57%. The state averages are well over 30-35%. Our children are not graduating. In my world, if you don't graduate, it's basically like hitting you in the head with a hammer. It takes away your options and your future. More importantly, it takes away the options and future for the society we live in if children do not finish school. Around the world, other countries get it, and they realize that there is nothing more important than their children be educated, because mastery of technology and being able to use it is the key to success for any society. Better technologies with better people who know how to use those technologies will be the future and will be the ones that control the future. In our country, where we still look at individual relevance and all these things which we all like to do, and we want schools to be nice and comfortable, we forget the societal importance of having successful schools. And I'd ask you to use this bill as a mechanism to begin to change the culture in the state. We don't just talk about the importance of education, but it permeates our society that it is the highest priority for our society is to have educated, competent citizens who can fulfill their duties. There's nothing more important for our survival, for our future. I just came back from Korea. My wife is from Korea. The signs in the subway say, education isn't study. English isn't study. English is life. That's in Korea. 50 million Koreans are studying English right now. And their children are going to schools, programs after school till midnight to become competent. China, Japan, India, that's the competition for our children right now. So I'd ask you to look at this issue not just as one of, boy, we want children to be successful, but also our society has to be successful. And as for the concerns regarding whether you can, what's the advantages of having children stay in school to 18, we as a society say you can't drink or smoke when you're 18. We set those rules and we say children don't have the ability to make those decisions. What's the bigger decision, to stay in school or to smoke a cigarette? What's the bigger decision, to have a beer, to stay in school? So please use this bill as the opportunity to begin to talk about the larger issue. Children, I think it's a great idea. Go to school to get your driver's license. Keep your driver's license. Employers, don't employ kids if they're not going to school and they don't have some mechanism. We have exceptional alternative school here, Yakus. We'll work around those kids' schedules if they have to work. But let's keep every kid in school and give every kid a chance, because it's the only way our society be successful. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Mark. And you know, part of the problem here is you're talking about push out.
Yes.
But you're the local school board. You control the education. You and the superintendent control how you deliver education. And all the data that we're getting here is the reasons for leaving school, you know, that they had freedom to drop out is number 4 or 5 down on the list. It's, are the classes interesting? You know, all the other things that are controlled at the local level of delivery of education. So I am having a real hard time figuring out how people say just change the law and force kids to stay in school 2 more years and somehow that changes the outcomes of the push out, which you are identifying as happening in your local school district. And so I understand the problem, and I don't mean to pick on you, but I think that every piece of information we have is that the relevancy of the education system to the students, and that's what we're hearing from the students here from the alternative school, is the bigger problem than just the mandatory age. So we are going to put this bill aside. We have other people to testify, but we have other issues on our plate today.
Thank you for taking me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we'll put this bill aside, and it's a huge issue that we are taking up in conjunction with the dropout problem, and it is a huge problem in our state. We're going to take just a moment here while we go to a roundtable discussion for, so we'll be at ease. We're back on the record with the Education Committee, and our purpose here is to look at the post-secondary scholarships that we've been talking about. There's been a number of bills. We've had the Taylor Foundation made a presentation, and you have you're asked to bring that with you. And we had HB 94 on post-secondary scholarships, and we had the need-based scholarship of House Bill, or no, the need-based roundtable. You should have a packet on that as well, with some information in it. And there's in that there's needs-based grant aid at University of Alaska. It's an independent analysis from 2005. And we have Diane Behrens and...
My name is Harry Need. I'm a graduate student at UAA.
Harry Need, okay. And the purpose today is to figure out, I know Representative Keller had been having a bill drafted, was talking about it for a long time. We have Representative Guttenberg that has a bill before us. The purpose today is to see if we can agree on the principles that the committee would like to go forward with on a bill, and see if we can, instead of specifically taking one bill and just testifying it, see if we can get a consensus in the committee of going forward with a needs-based or needs and merit-based scholarship program. So, Diane, can you give us a perspective of where we are right now as far as what's offered in Alaska and where you see the biggest hole for that would be from your perspective what we need to fill in Alaska?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
And Diane, before you go on, I just want to let you know also that Mary Grover and Sasha Oba from the University of Alaska are both online to participate as well.
Thank you. And Saichi and Mary are folks who've worked collaboratively with us on the programs that we have, so certainly welcome their input. I think the one thing we can agree on is that the current level of needs-based aid in Alaska is barely minimal. We do have a program that's been in place for just the last 3 years. We're able to offer needs-based grants. Currently, with the additional funding the legislature approved for the current year, for about 1,200 students. The maximum grant amount that they can receive through that program is $2,000. And with annual public institutional cost of attendance varying, depending on the student circumstances, from anywhere between $14,000 to $18,000 a year, typically, clearly, that is just the tip of the iceberg. And certainly the folks at the university can better describe their program, but the only other non-loan statewide program available right now is the University of Alaska Scholars Program, which does offer a four-year award for students who finish in the top 10% in their class. Having said that, due to funding constraints from the university, because they directly fund that program, they've had to cap the dollar value per year that a student can receive from that program as well. So it does not pay for the cost of attendance for someone who qualifies for that award.
And can you tell us what that cap is?
I would ask Saichi to speak to that, because it is a dollar amount.
Okay. Saichi, could you go ahead and identify yourself on the record, and then if you have the answer to that question?
Absolutely. My name is Saichi Oba. I'm the Associate Vice President for Students at the University of Alaska. The dollar amount for the Scholars Award is approximately $11,000.
And is that $11,000 over 4 years?
Correct. And actually, they do have, I believe it's 5 years to complete the use of all of those funds.
Okay, so is there a yearly amount then? There's an 11,000 in 5 year, or 11,000 permanent cap, I guess, per person. But is there a dollar amount per year?
It would be equally divided by the year for the student. So each term, the amount would be divided for the student to receive from the scholars program.
So if someone's coming in, I mean, you anticipate 5 years, and so you say, so it's $11,000, and then you divide that by five, and that's how much it is per year?
Actually, we anticipate 4 years of the award, and what would happen is if a student asked us to extend because they were going to take a term off or have some other type of stop out, then we would do that. But it's actually based on 4 years, but we give them up to 5 years to use it all.
Okay, so it's approximately $2,700 or something like that per year?
Correct.
Okay. Good. Representative Wilson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to know, is that needs-based of $2,000, is that per year or is that for their whole time?
I guess this is informal.
Yeah.
Representative Wilson, it's $2,000 per year with an annual or with an aggregate per student limit of $8,000. So they could have that for up to 4 years.
Was there another question, Representative Gardner?
Two questions. When you say the actual cost is $18,000, that's just tuition, correct?
No. What we do when we look at the, for instance, in terms of determining need for the state grant program, what we do is we take the average cost of attendance. The cost of attendance would include a fixed, generally fixed by the financial aid folks, living expense, books, okay, allowance, tuition and fees, and some transportation miscellaneous costs.
So the $18,000 is all in?
That's correct.
Okay, and the $2,000 maximum each under the needs-based, is that grant or loan?
That's grant.
Thank you.
Okay, and so if someone was a UA scholar and they qualified for the needs-based, then that would be approximately $4,700 per year.
That's correct. So that would not even be 50% of their cost of attendance for a single year.
Right. Representative Wilson.
Do you have any idea, like, what percent of the kids would qualify for both?
I don't, Representative Wilson. There is not a needs component to the Alaska Scholars. It's purely merit.
Okay, so how are we, Noah, did you have, or Harry, did you have any comment at this point?
Not particularly on this issue. What I was hoping to do is just maybe paint a picture of what a student situation would look like if present trends continued, and then also let you know about the endorsement of HB 94 by the students of the University of Alaska.
Okay, and let's see, Representative Keller, did you have any?
I would like to ask, and I didn't raise my hand, but
sure. No.
Do we have some kind of idea about how many students are standing in the quay wishing that they could get help and they don't qualify for any kind of assistance or loan out there? And then what kind of private loans are available to those students that, you know, can't get the Pell Grant, don't qualify for Alaska Scholars? And
just say your name because it is being recorded and the secretary might.
This is Diane Behrens again.
Yeah.
For an individual that doesn't qualify for either federal or state grant aid, there are certainly loan options available in Alaska. The federal education loan is a loan to which students are entitled. It is a low interest, relatively speaking, it's a low interest loan. There are annual loan maximums that vary by year in school that starts at the low end at $7,500 a year and then goes up beyond $12,000 a year. With respect to supplementing the amount a person can borrow, because we do encourage everybody goes first to the federal loans, the state does have its own alternative loan program, which allows a student as an undergraduate to borrow up to $8,500 per year, and as a graduate student to borrow up to $9,500 a year. So the combination of potential financing through the loan programs are substantial. However, of course, accompanying that is the concern related to a student leaving school, ideally with a credential that will earn them a living wage in the workforce with a debt that is substantial.
Follow-up, Representative Keller.
Just so I'm not misunderstood, I wasn't suggesting that the loan is a better option than a scholarship. I understand where we're at on this, but it was reported to me that 80% of the students that were trying to get in, there was no options except a private loan, and you know, at 16-18%. I just wanted to put that on the record. Thanks.
I might like to clarify that. I think
Harry Need.
It's been reported to the students at it's been reported to me at the University of Alaska Anchorage that should the credit limits be increased to allow the Student Loan Corporation to offer these loans in the future, given you know the market that we're in right now, up to 80% of the students who are currently receiving those student loans might not qualify under the new criteria with a new credit limit. Of course, if we don't increase those credit limits, 100% won't get them because the loans won't be available. Does that clarify?
Thank you for that clarification.
And Harry, you want to just pull that other mic? No, you don't have to move. Just pull the other mic, just directionally. You don't have to speak right close. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I just want to say thank you. I think this is going to be very productive. I mean, House Bill 94, from my perspective, is trying to address as many students coming as we can. But there are so many issues that expanding this to whatever we can get, I think is going to be very productive. Whatever bill comes out, hopefully we'll do that. But my question, well, I don't have a question, but an observation. It's Harry Reid?
Need.
Okay, that's what I wrote down. Thank you. You were going to walk us through what a student faces coming in, and I think that'd be very productive. But I'm not just looking for the traditional student, the student that gets out of high school. I'm looking for the single parent that decides to go back to school, the student getting out of high school, both eligible for scholars program and not. And you know, I want to make sure that the student who, you know, I think the overachievers have a lot of options available to them, but the student that all they do is manage to skirt through the system, and but continue advancing, you know, with if nothing else, a satisfactory report at the end, gets a degree or certification, and then goes on to be, you know, a welder with a PhD or whatever it is. So you were going to walk us through that, and I wonder if we could do that.
Let's see. I want to make sure that we have the breadth first of what's available. So we've got the current financial need grant. We've got the UA scholar, which may or may not be applicable depending upon where you were in the 10% of the high school graduates. And then we have the federal and state loan program. Are there additional things that you'd like to talk to us about on that, Diane?
Well, Representative Seaton, the other thing to keep in mind is for the neediest students going into school, there is the Pell Grant. The Pell Grant for just this next year will increase to a maximum grant amount of $5,350 per year. And so that is meaningful funds for those who can qualify, but they are, you would need to think they would need to be in the lowest economic quartile in order to assume that they would qualify. And of course, the problem there is those students in Alaska simply aren't going to college now. So the ones who are going to college are from typically above that economic quartile, and so we can't assume that a high percentage of them would receive that Pell Grant.
Okay, and Representative Wilson.
When you say the the lowest quarter percentile. How much money are you talking about?
As a guesstimate, you'd be talking less than $20,000 a year for a family of two or three. And then it ratchets up. Depending on family size, it can get larger than that. But typically, you wouldn't see, even with a large family, that amount being much over $35,000 per year in total income.
Okay, Ripner Wilson.
And so people like that, or that are in that category, just aren't looking at going, trying to further their education.
Representative Wilson, they're graduating high school at lower rates. They're prepared, those that graduate from high school, they're prepared to benefit from post-secondary education at lower rates, and they simply aren't prepared. Oftentimes, because folks from that economic quartile have no model within their family of someone going on to college, they've never planned to go on to college, they haven't thought about it financially, they haven't thought about it academically, and it's simply not in their spectrum of choices.
One more time,
yeah.
Sorry.
Sure. No.
So we don't have very many people that qualify for the Pell Grants then at all.
A lower percentage than you would see in other states. And SITU may have that number, but I'm thinking it's less than 10% of the students at the University of Alaska that qualify for Pell.
And SITU, is that where, I'm sorry if I'm messing up your name. I'm terrible with names. Is that the approximation that you would give as well as 10% at the university?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question? I did not hear Diane's comment.
The percentage of students at the university that qualify for Pell Grants?
I don't have that figure directly in front of me. I can give you just a general number of students who apply for federal financial aid. It's approximately 50% of all students at the university. So, for example, last year we had just under 17,000 students submit the federal financial aid for free student aid. And so of that percentage, if Diane's perception is perhaps 10% would qualify for Pell, I think that would be a reasonable estimate.
Okay, thanks. So half apply under FAFSA and 10% of those would probably qualify for Pell. And we're talking ballpark here. Or is it 10% of the total, meaning 20% of those that apply under FAFSA?
I would suggest that it's 10% of the total student body. So certain students are simply self-selecting out. They're deciding. Perhaps they submitted a FAFSA in the past and didn't qualify for anything, and they presume that they will continue to not qualify. So that would be my thought.
Okay, thanks. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, and I'll try to stay on track. So how does that affect student population growth or the demographics of who's going to school?
I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. It should have a negative effect. We've got flat population growth in Alaska. We have increasing proportion of the Alaska population that is falling into the lower economic echelons. If we are unable to do something to encourage this sector of the population to go on and continue post-secondary education, we will see a diminishment of the benefits that the University of Alaska can offer us as a state.
Okay. So that kind of rounds out where we are as far as Pell Grants and anything else. So there, we know where we are. Let's see. Harry, you want to go ahead and give us that overview?
Gladly.
And if we can, shorten it up. Sorry.
Sure. I won't give you my life story, but I am, essentially, I am the student that had the okay grades, nothing fantastic. I didn't qualify for any scholarships. I took student loans. I'm in graduate school now and continuing on that path. I'm paying my loans now. My wife and I met in law school and collectively probably have about $120,000 of student loan debt, which is basically is a little bit of undergrad debt and 3 years of law school debt, which, as you know, tuition in law school is much more. We're paying $1,200 a month on our student loan bill, just between our lenders. And I think that could be, we would be much more productive, obviously, in the economy if we weren't sending our money out of state. We'd probably be buying a house right now. We would be contributing philanthropically at a higher, we do contribute philanthropically to UAA, but we would contribute at a higher rate to the university to help out other students like us. And so that's kind of the broad picture of where I'm at now. As we've heard, the federal loans are about the, staying about the same, maybe increasing a little bit. I think the rate's going to increase a little bit on the repayment. Scholarships are pretty much where they've always been. There's potentially some sources of state loans, depending on whether or not you can qualify for them in the future. But there still leaves a large amount of money that needs to be sought from private loans. Private loans are becoming tiered and an average rate of 16% for repayment. That essentially what that means is that we have students that in maybe a generation would look a lot like me, would look at, with only an undergraduate degree, by the way, that would be students that would have maybe $40,000 of debt or, at 16% repayment rate, which would be the worst credit card that any of these students have ever had. It would cripple them. It would cripple Alaska as these students weren't able to contribute fully to the economy because they'd be taking their money and sending it out of state to repay those debts. And so that's kind of, the writing's on the wall, and I just want to bring that to your attention that if there isn't another source, if there isn't state-granted aid to these students, then that could be a picture of an average graduate in a few years. So thank you.
Thanks. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there in Alaska, for people that are on welfare, that are trying to get ahead, is there anything that is an incentive for them for like a work incentive program where they could go to school and their school would get paid for when they were done? When I was way back when when I was I had been married and then found myself alone with three children, and I was on welfare, and the program, it was called the WIN program, Work Incentive something or other, and they helped me. I borrowed my first year of nurses training, but the next 2 years they paid my tuition, my books, and my babysitter so I could go to school. Is there anything like that in Alaska?
Representative Wilson, I have to admit I am not really conversant with the programs that are available through Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I believe there are the program, I believe, is called the STEP program, or is it the ATEP program? I get the acronyms mixed up, but I think there are some programs. I'm not sure that they're as generously developed as the one that you participated in through the WIN program, but I believe there may be some funding available to them. It's just not holistic like that program offered.
Reverend Wilson.
One was the STEP. What was the other one? It might have been
ATEP. Is that what it is?
I was just remembering. That's what you said.
Uh-oh, be careful.
We'll have to look back for
I can
department.
Certainly research that and get information for you.
So I guess we're looking at this, and now we're trying to figure out what is the biggest hole that, or the way to plug it in a way that, we can get through the legislature as well. I mean, we can't just say everything's free. So, Diane, what are the criteria that you see as being probably the most responsive to Alaskan students that would be a reasonable way to address this?
Representative Seaton, you had asked me to respond last month after a similar discussion with the committee to suggest best practices. I shared some information with you in the letter of February 23rd that I think is included in the packets that describe best practices as they have been deployed in other states. One of the programs that is pointed to as being most successful is the Indiana Scholars Program. They have a 21st Scholars Program. But I think the starting point is deciding what are the specific objectives of the policymakers in program design. If it is to improve high school graduation, you may build certain elements into the program, such as early commitment, letting students know at those critical decision points in their educational pipeline when they're saying, yes, I'm going to college, or no, I'm not going to college. That makes a commitment to them if they do certain things. That gets to the academic preparation piece. But it does postpone the bang for the buck as well when you're starting with middle school. So if the idea is to immediately affect some advantage to students who are currently in the pipeline, as in they have made the transition to post-secondary education, then I think a combination of needs and merit, such as Representative Gutenberg has suggested, is a way to go. I think one of the issues that the bill raises is if I'm somebody who is out in the workforce now and I may have not gotten good grades in high school or I may have even gotten a GED, is there a way for me to demonstrate competencies so that I too could qualify for this program from the outset? I think there may be a way once someone is in the college that they might qualify for a grant at year two or three. It's not real clear yet in the bill, I think, what that trigger might be. But I think some way to assess that somebody has the ability to succeed at the college level is critical to determining the return of it on investment, if you will.
And let me stop you there for a minute. Let me see whether we have pretty much committee agreement that we want that assessment not necessarily tied to high school graduation, but that we want some assessment that's going to be this merit-based decision point. Is that pretty well agreed so that we...
I would, Representative Seaton, this is Wes. I'd have to see how we would do that. I cannot imagine sitting here thinking, what, we're going to come up with another test? And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's impossible. Let's explore it. But I would need to see the criteria before I'd say I was in agreement with what you just said. In other words, assessing a college student to see if they qualify for the scholarships, you know, the merit-based stuff, we just need to figure out what that is.
Right. And if we look at, you know, the bill that Representative Guttenberg had, it was a 3.0 or higher in high school, and right, that's what we're talking about. Do we kind of agree the Alaska, what is Alaska Needs or Alaska, what's the AK AIMS, or what's the current other in the workforce development field that identifies that? What can you give us some suggestion, Diane?
Well, there is a tool. It's the American College Testing Organization has an online assessment tool called WorkKeys. Which currently one state, Michigan, is using as one means to determine whether or not someone has the capacity to enter at a college level and without remediation and perform adequately. So that is one tool that is being used. It is an assessment tool that the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development is encouraging it's not mandated at this point, but is encouraging high schools to use in assessing student competency. And I think increasingly, rather than looking at a GPA, which may be based on one set of curricula that is very different student to student, this competency testing mechanism is being seen as an attractive alternative.
And would, I'm just trying to get interest of
conceptually, yes.
Conceptually, work keys, and we'll get some information on that. Is that you or the department that we need to get that from?
The department may have some in-house expertise. They may contract out for that support as well, but I can find that out.
And Representative Wilson?
I do know that the department is trying to get that going in the schools, and I think that it will be something that some kids, if they don't have the grade point average, at least they'll be able to say, oh, if I want to do this, this is what I have to meet. And I think that would be a really good way to do it, to be honest.
Okay, well, we have run out of time. but I would like to ask us all to refer to Diane's letter and also work, maybe you and Representative Guttenberg and I can all work together, because I know you had some ideas for a bill in the offing as well, and see if we can get there. And Diane and anyone else, if they have other suggestions for us, for the committee, if they could get those to us. And we'll take this, we've got to continue this discussion, but it's difficult to have the discussion under time pressure, and that's where we are. So is there anything else? Then we will be adjourned at 10:07.